Good afternoon, everybody. As you probably know, this is going to be an English panel. I looked at the agenda and we're very, well, honored. We're one of the few big panels today. All the other panels have three people. Today we are sitting here with the four of us. My name is Emmanuel Rodolfo. I am the content manager for Bitcoin Magazine Netherlands. I have the honor of sitting here with three distinguished gentlemen in the crypto space, and we're going to be discussing security of Bitcoin and the future of Bitcoin. So, in the beginning, I'll introduce the three of them, and then afterwards, we'll be having a few questions that we are going to discuss on the topic. I'm hoping at the end, we'll still have some time so we could throw it to you guys as well. At the end of the day, I won't have every single question that will cover what you guys want to know. So we'll pass it to you and hopefully get some questions from the public as well. That's the whole idea of the breakout room, a little bit more closer to us and get more information. Okay? I'm happy you all are here today. So, I'll start off with there. We got Mr. Ruben right here. Mr. Ruben is a Belgian entrepreneur. His career spans from finance to technology. He co-founded Engrave in 2018. And prior to that, he worked on several projects, several tech projects, investment projects, including one of Belgium's early automated investment platforms. To be honest, I didn't know that. In my research, I found that out. That was very, very cool. So Engrave operates completely in an offline, ensuring users of private keys are never exposed to online threats. And he sets himself apart from the competition with a wallet that does not require online interaction. So that's Mr. Ruben. Moving on from there, Bondane. We're going to stick with that, okay? No problem. Mr. Bondane is from France. Belgium as well.
Belgium too.
Yeah. Belgium too.
The French-speaking part.
Yeah, the French-speaking part of Belgium. Okay, he's the co-founder and CEO of Satochip, hardware wallet company, offering security through an innovative smart card format. At the end of the day, Satochip wallets support multiple cryptocurrencies and integrate with widely used software as well, making for a smooth Bitcoin management. At the end of the day, the whole point of Satochip is to make it easy and affordable to manage your Bitcoin. Mr. Jameson, we've already heard him speak at the main stage. One of the best comments I've heard today. At the end of the day, this is one of the most beautiful buildings we've ever sat in when it comes to cryptocurrency events. And I have to agree with you. Thank you very much for that comment. Mr. James Lambdon has been in this space longer than most of us, I think. He's been here for a while. You can see it by his beard. That's why his beard is so long. He's been around for a while. So at the end of the day, CEO of Casa, he focuses primarily on multisig wallets. He is the father of security. And his ideal solution is the long-term Bitcoin holder approach. So a lot of the long-term Bitcoin holders, high net worth individuals, are using the solution that he is using. Casa solutions are aimed at providing sovereign control. That was one of the points that I came across in my research review. Sovereign control over Bitcoin assets while maintaining a user-friendly experience. Was everything I said correct? Yes, yes, I hope so. Ladies and gentlemen, we have three real masters here. And on that point, I would like to start right off the bat with a simple question for all three of you. Bitcoin adoption keeps moving forward. At the end of the day, we are going to be dealing with a completely new set of users. A lot of the people in here have been in the space for a long period already, so we know what we're doing. But with the new users coming in, how do you keep providing security at a level for us at an advanced level, but at the same time, making it user-friendly for those adopting Bitcoin now, right now? Let me start with you, Ruben.
Yes, let the question sink in a bit.
Yeah.
So I guess one of the things that we've been working on for the last 2 years with Engrave is on how do we make sure that all of these retail banks out there who already have all the users, all users in Web2, how do we make sure that they offer, that they offer crypto solutions to these people, but in a way that it's still in line with the ethos of crypto itself. So for me, the way I look at this is Engrave is all about start truly owning what is yours. It's your keys, it's your money, it's your assets, it's your crypto and Bitcoin. But it also means that you have to manage the key. So Web2 users don't want to have anything to do with keys. For a bank trying to offer something today to the end user, it has to be keyless one way or another, but you still want to make sure that the bank doesn't own your keys. Because if we do that, we just go back in time before Bitcoin even existed and we haven't progressed at all. So the last 2 years, we as Engrave, we've actually worked together with some of these large players in the market to build such a solution. So a solution that is essentially keyless, and it all starts from the app. A solution that thinks about how can these trusted parties, as they are, I mean, like BlackRock, for example, has been around for a long time and has a lot of trust to the track records, but of course doesn't come with the trust from the immutable ledger. So what I'm trying to say is that it is possible to actually offer the best of both worlds, and that's what we have been trying to do with Engrave now. Essentially, you can start with a keyless app that you can decide who can become your recovery points. So for example, you could say BlackRock becomes one of your recovery partners. They have a piece of your key, but they never have your key, so they can never access your money. You can add points, like let's say your Gmail account could be a point, your Apple ID could be a point. But also at some point, what happens is you have a lot of money on that app. You may even have a house deed on that app. You may have everything that's digitally relevant to you in that app. So then it makes sense to sort of upsell this person, this client, to a cold wallet. And obviously there, our approach is hardware first, security first. Software doesn't exist without hardware. So to then actually offer the second layer as well. So you sort of seamlessly onboard people, and you can do that as a bank. You can offer the self-custody, which is a market, it will not go away. And of course, on the other side, we can also help them in doing what they all want to do, which is just custody all your assets.
So if I hear you well, you could provide it for an advanced feature and for those who are, like we like to call them, noobs to the market and don't have a complete understanding of it.
Yeah, so you really take them through a very easy journey. We start without keys, you make them choose recovery points, you offer an upgrade to ultimate security with a cold wallet. And even if the user wants that, he can just say, sorry, I like to outsource things. I'm giving it all to you. You're the bank. You just keep it. But you make sure that both dimensions
are covered.
Exist.
Wonderful. Baudeng, from your side, Satochip.
Yes. I think if we want to onboard the next billion user in Bitcoin, we have to have something very convenient for user. And it's probably going to be mobile solutions first. Because people now are using their mobile more and more, more than this, their desktop. Some people don't have a desktop, they just have their mobile. A lot of people in Africa, in South America also, they don't have a desktop, they only have mobile. And they want something that's easy, but still secure. And that's the approach that we have with Satochip. We have something that's open source, and that's just like a smart card. So something that's trusted by people in the bank sector, that's already used by billions of people in their SIM cards, and that can store, actually, that's built to store a private key. And that's very affordable. So we can provide a solution that's convenient, that's mobile with NFC, and that's affordable, and still offer a very high level of security. And then we have incremental security for people that are storing more money. Maybe they need increasing complexity and maybe a device more adapted. But to start, it's good to have something simple.
You foresaw my next question. How do you cater to the most advanced user? Like you said, you have scalability. And you made a very good point. At the end of the day, we of Bitcoin Magazine, we noticed as well that 98% of our traffic comes from mobile devices. So everybody is on their mobile. Very good point, Mr. Liu.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with all of the points, so I'm not going to repeat them. We try to abstract away keys because nobody actually wants to manage keys. Mobile, Casa is mobile first, even though we use other, hardware key storage solutions as part of it. But the main interface is mobile. But from a much higher perspective, just zooming out, there's some problems that I think are systemic in nature. One of them is you have to understand that the default path that people take in software or in life in general is very sticky. And what I mean by that is, if you look at how most people get into Bitcoin today, they go to an exchange and they buy it. And usually that's where their journey ends.
It stays there.
Yeah. You know, even asking them to take that next step and withdraw is too much to ask for many people. So I think that over a long term, one of the systemic things we need to change is we need to stop telling people to buy Bitcoin, and we need to tell them to earn Bitcoin. You know, sell your goods, sell your services for this new hard money. And you know, another aspect of this security stuff is that it's very hard to sell someone on the concept of self-custody and security. It's a fairly abstract thing. It's very much like trying to sell someone on privacy. A lot of people just can't understand it and until they get to the point where they get burned by it. So, you know, I hope it isn't the case where most people have to end up losing a lot of money to understand what the ramifications are. But once again, it's this complicated thing to explain to people. I spent half an hour earlier today trying to explain to a gentleman here that his exchange apps on his phone, they're never going to give him the keys. Like, that's just not how it works. He will never actually own that money. Mm-hmm. And even just trying to get him to understand the difference in the security models between those two things was very difficult to do.
At the end of the day, they're so used to the normal financial system that it's going to be very difficult for them to understand. But, you know, that is a good segue to move to the next question I had. With the introduction, for example, of CBDCs, we are moving towards a very centralized, surveilled financial system who's trying to break into our market, our space. How are you guys preparing to still offer the level of decentralized security at a centralized, surveilled financial system level with CBDCs? You want to start over there? You want to start over here? Let's start over there.
Well, yeah. I have no plans of supporting CBDCs. You know, but this is a difficult problem from a regulatory perspective. I think we talked about this a little bit, but you know, my company and really all of us, we are all non-custodial. You know, we are hardware and software providers.
Yes.
But the powers that be, definitely in Europe, there's been a little bit of it in America. The authorities, they want to pull us into their regulatory jurisdiction.
How will you prevent that?
Well, all we can really do is educate people and make them aware. And if you believe in participating in the political process, then of course you're free to do that. I personally think that the most effective way for us to fight against or opt out of the system is to build parallel systems that simply are not controllable. You know, this is why free and open source, making these things available to people without having to go through trusted, you know, like regulatory third parties, whatever, is an important, you know, escape valve, if you would.
Very good. Now, from your side, you're open source.
Yes.
So indeed, we provide open source solution. All the applications that we do are open source, and the firmware of the smart card is also open source, which means that people actually can buy smart cards, blank smart cards, compile the code and load it themselves on the card, which means they can build their own hardware wallet. And I think with the open source philosophy, which is the philosophy behind Bitcoin, is the way to decentralize and to make it impossible for governments to reach out to people and to provider of service. If we are sufficiently decentralized and if people are able to bypass and to have the possibility to build their own stuff, it will be increasingly difficult for a government to act if they don't have a central point of failures.
Very good. And from the Engrave side, decentralized is at the core of what you do. So how do you keep pushing that forward?
So when we started Engrave, We said, in the end of the day, CeFi is coming, but you have to. But we are going to start from the most decentralized part of the spectrum as we can. So what we did is we reviewed the end-to-end journey of a user trying to be decentralized, which obviously starts with your keys. We realized there are no good keys in this world, or let's say there weren't any good keys in the world in 2018. So we even decided to fully innovate and revamp the key concept, which led to our patented key, which is called the Engrave Perfect Key. And we did that for every single step of what the user needs to do. So ultimately, of course, everything will converge a bit to centralization. We just wanted to make sure that we don't go from centralized to decentralized, but from decentralized to centralized. If I think about your initial question, how do we remain off the grid in this whole setup? Then it starts there. It starts with an offline device that can create keys that you know for a fact have no trace whatsoever online. There is no database where they may potentially be kept. Any hot wallet that you use only comes with the questions of, did anybody see my key? Did they put it in a database? Was the software process good enough? Hardware is better. And ultimately, you're creating in thin air, in the ether, one of the billions of possibilities of keys that is linked to its own public key and therefore its wallet. So I think when Bitcoin came out, it actually said something borderless and boundless that we cannot go back to from.
And I hope we never do.
Exactly. And so there are things today that are called DarkFi that go very deep into, okay, you will no longer know who sent the transaction, where it was sent to, what was sent. Everything becomes abstracted. And all of these buzzwords like zero knowledge proofs and all are all parts of that. So in the end, I think there will always be a way to remain off the grid if that's what you want to do.
And let's put it like that, just for me to elaborate on what you said. You said something very important, user experience. With user experience comes usability, because that is at the core of user experience. But usability comes at the expense of security. It's always been like that. The more availability and the more usability you create within the security framework, the more insecure it becomes. James, from your side, where do you think it should stop when it comes to usability, especially with mainstream, where everybody's used to having this huge dashboard where they can press a button and accomplish so much? Where should we stop?
Well, usability, or another, I think another way of looking at that, at least when it comes to self-custody, is how much complexity can you abstract away and hide from the user? Inevitably, you will hit a limit at some point. But for us, the real point at which we're not going to go any further is we're not going to hold your keys for you, or at least in Casa's perspective, we're willing to hold one out of five or one out of three keys. We never want to be in a position where we become a single point of failure. So that's the hard line for us, is we're not going to make compromises in the name of usability if it creates a weakness like that.
Wonderful. Love it. Satut.
Yeah, I'm not sure that convenience is always opposed to security, because if security increases complexity, people will take a shortcut and they will decrease their security, or they will use the secure product in an insecure way. So convenience and ease of use can also help security by helping the user use the hardware wallet correctly. And so that's the approach that we also try to develop with SatoChip, is to have something very, very easy to use, where the user can set up a hardware wallet in like 60 seconds. Maybe it's not perfect setup, but there is also incremental step that they can do. If they feel more comfortable, they can increase their security by adding more steps, but in a incremental way.
In other words, you have a learning curve when it comes to creating.
Exactly.
I understand. And Grave.
Yeah, I get the maxim of that there will always be a trade-off between security and convenience, but I think it's more about the context. And when it comes about context, it actually becomes quite straightforward. If you want to go to the shop and you want to pay with your hot wallet and you have 100 euros on your hot wallet, it can be one click pay and you're done. But if you're talking about $1 billion, you need much more secure infrastructure. So it all just depends on the context, what kind of risk you are okay to have for a certain amount of money, which is, again, contextual for every person as well. So I see it more like that rather than that you have to give up security. Second, for us, like Engrave, our first promise to every user we have is we will never compromise on your security. That's the rule number one. The second thing for us that was important was to make it as easy to use as possible. So we always try to follow in our heads, how would Apple build this device? And I think the best way to see that is for yourself. We have a workshop today where we actually pack out zeros and you can see it for yourself. That you can actually combine
the usability and security.
Exactly.
I understand. You want to say something? Go ahead.
I was just going to mention, you know, like one of our design mantras at Casa is that usability is security. And what we mean by that is you can build the most incredibly secure system out there, but if it's so difficult to use, then you have theoretical security, nobody using it, therefore no practical security. So it is about striking these balances to actually get people into a somewhat secure system.
Keyword there is balance. I like that one. Now, moving from there, you've all innovated in a different way. Air-gapped, multisig, smart card. So at the end of the day, where are you going? Have you reached a point where you're comfortable where you are? Are you comfortable, Jameson, where Casa is right now?
No. There's a lot of room for improvement. And we're always paying attention to what's happening at the protocol level.
Yep.
There are things that we would love to implement that are already in the Bitcoin protocol, but you know, we have dependency issues because unlike them, we are not a hardware manufacturer, and this is by design. We want people to use multiple different hardware vendors. That's kind of part of our reduction of single points of failure security model. And the downside to that is that we are giving up a lot of control over the user experience when you're using those devices. We're giving up the ability to do certain things where, you know, if hardware manufacturers have not added, for example, support for like Schnorr signature, like aggregated signing stuff, that's one of the things that we want to be able to do. We can't do that until all of our supported hardware vendors are supporting that in their firmware.
So room for improvement. Sato, are you happy where you guys are right now?
Oh, there's a lot of stuff to improve. I think in the Bitcoin ecosystem first, with the way people can self-custody their Bitcoin, with the management of the secrets, the seed. There has been a lot of improvement with B32, B39, Mnemonic, and so on, but it's still very complex for beginners. And of course, at Satoship, there is a lot of work that we still need to do to improve the usability, to have more integration, support more functionalities of Bitcoin. Jameson talk about Schnorr signature. That's something that we have implemented, but we still have to harden it and to make it more easy to use. And so we have still a lot of work.
Room for improvement.
Oh, a lot of work, yes.
I know Engrave is doing good. I know you're happy. But where do you guys want to go? Where do you want to keep innovating?
Oh, we haven't even started yet.
Okay.
We've been working for 6 years on developing and building, but it's still just the beginning.
Okay, wonderful. As we were discussing, one of those questions were leading towards the future. Ruben, for you, for example, what kind of solutions would you like banks to develop to still keep you close enough to self-custody in the DeFi aspect, in the crypto aspect, when it comes to Engrave?
Yeah, I think in the first question I answered, I probably gave a bit my answer to that. So I think, like, if we look at the US, for example, there was a bill passed which literally says you now have the right to self-custody. It's a human right to own your own keys, which is something, which is a statement that literally opens and legitimizes a whole market. And the US is a market of 300 million people. So we as Engrave are now positioning ourselves to actually become one of your trusted partners to build out your self-custodial to custodial offering as a retail bank. So let's say our mission has always been to protect 500 million people by 2032 with our technology. We can, of course, do that in retail, but it's one by one, which goes pretty slowly. Or we can partner with really big institutions out there that have millions or hundreds of millions of customers, and then suddenly we are there. So that's what we're working on now, and we're partnering with, as we speak, to launch solutions like that, where we are the ones to make sure that the retail institutions out there, they actually respect the core of the ethos of Bitcoin, which is the key should be on the user side. Your and keys. Nobody should ever be able to tell you, you cannot access your money, you can only withdraw 50 euros from the bank today. So that's what we're trying to push from our side as Engrave as a mission going forward.
Wonderful. From your guys, Sato Chip, smart card, hard wallets, what is missing in the adoption of Bitcoin for you to take the next step?
Hard to tell, but like if banks would start to propose Bitcoin management to their user, they could really easily technically do it. And we could, for example, provide the smart cards to do that. I think the main limitation is the regulation, at least for the banking sector. They are afraid to touch everything related to crypto and to Bitcoin because they would come across with the regulators. So it's probably more regulatory limitations than any other factor, and maybe also convince the user to use it. But once the banks or their trusted financial advisor present them with this alternative, I think that could go quite fast.
Wonderful. Jameson, from your kind, you said a very interesting thing just now. If you take part in the political process of choosing, you can effect change. What change are you hoping for that will affect CASA?
Really what I want is not change. And by that, I mean, at least in America, what we're dealing with is a current administration that is attacking our industry. And they are creating chaos because they're essentially creating rules, from a regulatory enforcement perspective. There is an argument to be made that one way that we get towards stability, at least in America, is by codifying into law some of the things that we all believe are already the case. And so I think there's a bill that has made it through the House of Congress that would do things like, you know, give people the right to self-custody, the right to mine, so on and so forth. Basically, the problem right now is that we don't have legal clarity, and therefore there's this big gray area for regulators to just do whatever they want without much repercussion.
That was interesting. My partner this morning, he had an interview with Tour de Minister, and he asked him, at the end of the day, you guys have two choices in the U.S. right now. You can vote for one party or the other party. And what does he think about that? And his answer was interesting for me because he said, don't listen to what they're saying. Look at what they're doing. Some of them have been there for over 3 years and didn't do anything with Bitcoin or anything with crypto. And the other one is promising a lot to do with it, and he's pushing it. So from that perspective, do you believe he would be able to bring a change in the U.S. if elected?
What the way that I'm looking at, like, the presidential election is I don't want any help from politicians. I just want them to leave us alone. And as silly as Trump can be, you know, he's quite an entertainer, a character.
Yeah.
He has skin in the game, even though he's doing some shady stuff. Hey, that's obvious, the space. And he has come to multiple Bitcoin events. You know, he's actually spent time doing that. And all that we've really seen from the Harris side and the current Biden administration is a tax and then some nice promises that we're going to promote innovation in the future, whatever that means.
From your side, for example, for Engrave, does it matter who gets elected in the U.S.? Let's start with Engrave. Would it matter?
I think it's a very political question.
Yes, it is.
So it's hard for me to answer that. Because I thought about it a few times personally, because you could say maybe if one gets elected, then the market might, or let's say the adoption might go faster. But if that person gets elected, it might be in, it might be against my own principles. So do I want the adoption to go faster because of that? I think I'm probably more in the courts of of Jameson. Yeah.
It's a conundrum. What does Satochip think?
It has probably a big, it will probably have a big impact, but I don't really know behind their promise what these people are going to do, and I don't want to rely on them. And somehow, I don't care because I think Bitcoin don't need politicians, especially that kind of politicians. Maybe it's even better if they go against Bitcoin because it will force us to be better.
Yeah.
And Bitcoin is anti-fragile, so actually it's getting better when it's challenged.
So the key takeaway, I don't care. I hope they stay out of it and leave us alone.
Yeah, look,
love it.
I think you can make arguments for, you know, Trump may be better as a short-term thing, and like short-term adoption and sort of ease a lot of this fear of the unknown of what's going to happen in the space. But I think we can all agree long-term, both administrations, both major political parties are going to do the same thing. They're going to keep printing. They're going to keep going into further debt. And so from that macroeconomic perspective, you know, Bitcoin is
not
going to
benefit us in a way. Okay. They haven't kicked us out yet. No, they haven't kicked us out yet. One question per panelist. Can we agree for that? Yes. Okay. No problem. Is there any, where's someone can help me with the mic so he could actually say it in the mic? Robert, can you pass him the mic, please? Sir, in the orange Satoshi, sir.
I'll try to do my best. Have you ever been in a situation where you received a signal from the regulators that you had to adjust your business strategy? And I know it's a sensitive question maybe, but can you maybe elaborate on such a situation if you ever encountered such a situation ever?
Is there a specific for someone specifically, or do you want anybody?
No, the three of you, perhaps one of you already had such
I suspect like we're all software providers. Like we don't talk to regulators and we don't want to talk to regulators. We don't want anything to do with them. We hear about proposals. And so I think there was the MiCA proposal here, which originally may have affected self-custody. We had another proposal in America that may have effective self-custody that would have brought us into the purview of financial regulators. And thankfully, it sounds like those have been shelved for the time being.
Any of you want to say something on it?
So personally, I didn't have any discussion with regulator and I've never been contacted by them. So hopefully it stays like this.
Wonderful. Any other questions?
Question?
That's... Of course, of course.
What problem?
CBDCs. I would say it's a problem in search of a solution. But no, I think it's a way for politicians to keep control of the money. And it's a response to decentralization with Bitcoin. So they want to counterattack, and they want to present it like a decentralized money, but it's just fiat. It's a wolf in disguise as a sheep sometimes.
Wonderful. Any last questions? Yes, sir.
I think this conference is very sad. Every time I narrative that the war comes to get, like, average Joe gets banned, like using Bitcoin, currency will have the mass adoption. I think that doesn't change in
the last 10 years, yes.
Once keyword keys rather change, do you see that it's a necessary step, that the more people adopt IFF ETFs, what do you mean here?
Ruben, let's start with Ruben. Ruben, you want to take that one?
I'm not sure if I understood the question.
Sorry. But do we need, in short, do we need mass adoption? Do you think we need mass adoption?
For what?
At the end of the day, what he's trying to prove is that we've been talking about, hey, Bitcoin will grow, Bitcoin will become self-sustaining if we get more people into the space for 10 years.
One reflection I sometimes make myself is think back about the entity that came with the whole idea, which is Satoshi Nakamoto.
Yeah.
If he would be seeing what's going on right now, let's say suddenly there are Bitcoin ETFs and it enters the mainstream, would he turn around in his grave or in his bed, depending on whether he's alive or not? That's a question that sometimes goes through my mind. And I think it's a question like that we should also have in our own heads when we're thinking about mass adoption.
At the end of the day, just to simplify what he's trying to say is, the more adoption we get, the more further we step away from the original source of what Bitcoin is supposed to be.
Well, possibly, but at the same time, it's more about how is it being adopted.
Exactly. Like
if BlackRock suddenly offers it, if Fidelity offers it, if...
Is that what we want?
Yeah.
Exactly.
I think the adoption use cases don't matter so much as it is the total number of people who are using Bitcoin in some way. It's a network effect problem. The larger the network grows, the stronger the network becomes, the more doors that have to be kicked down by the authorities in order to affect any negative change upon it. And so this is why I think we're all concerned, for example, about the ETFs and big custodians getting too much Bitcoin into them, because that's actually making fewer doors that need to get kicked down to have massive consequences.
Wonderful. I would like to thank Ruben, Bodane, Jameson, from all of you here. Thank you very much. We were live on Bitcoin Magazine, and I appreciate for everybody who watched us live. Thank you very much for being here with us, and thank you to all of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.